Okay, before we begin tonight, I wanted to take this opportunity to thank Zev Amster, whose idea this was to have this year, and specifically on this topic. So we would like to all thank him very, very much for the all the effort and the idea. So just very quickly, the way I understand it is we're going to use the Sefer Shari Halacha. Class, I didn't know the Sefer before Zev mentioned it to me, but I bought it, and it's a really wonderful Sefer. So the only problem is, what do you need me for? It's really written really well, and it's very comprehensive, and it's excellent. So Zev told me exactly that maybe there's certain things that could be added. Maybe there's certain insights that I could give, which I think maybe going through the first few pages, maybe that's true, even though it is written very well. Also, another aspect is people are obviously encouraged to ask questions. So sometimes, if you read a book and you have a question, so obviously Zev was also kind enough to buy some of them. So if you want to buy it or buy it on your own, you could read ahead or whatever, or come next week. And if something's unclear or something you didn't understand, so we could discuss it. I don't know if I'll necessarily have the answer, but at least we could discuss it. And another aspect is sometimes there's, this is particularly a challenge with some people who come from limited backgrounds, what we call Balei Tshuva. And that is that sometimes you can learn a halacha, and you can learn the halacha very well. There's many Knei Nehora, a lot of sources that you can learn halacha. But the issue is also that sometimes you learn the halacha, but you don't have a minhag. You don't have a minhag. And I find this a very difficult challenge for people, because maybe your grandfather or great-grandfather was from, but, if you're missing some of these minhagim, it really makes a very, very big difference. If you don't have these little things to add. Now, some of them might not be sourced in halacha necessarily, but some are. And we have a lot of halachas that are sourced in, a lot of minhagim that are sourced in halacha. I just want to mention before we begin, Rabbi Fritz, who's one of our bigger poskim in America, who I'm close with him, I just spoke to him just today about something. So he's told me, you always, and I used to tell the girls in Beis Yaakov this, whenever we're talking about something, you always have to, when you're talking about halacha, you right away have to think about, we're talking about something d'oraisa, something from the Torah, something d'rabbanan, or something that's a minhag. It's a very big difference in halacha. There's a very big difference in halacha if we're talking about eating on Yom Kippur, eating chametz on Pesach, or we're talking about something that's d'rabbanan, so many d'rabbanans. Which ones you want to pick? Shaking a lulav on the days other than the first day of Sukkot, is drabanan, or tama minhag, stand or sit during Kiddush, minhag. So what do you do? Stand or sit for a Kiddush and or a Havdalah. Very big difference. Now, with that said, even though minhag is at the bottom of the ladder there, but still minhag are very important. I could tell you, I don't know, but I could tell you this is a, you might know that there is such a thing, it's brought down in halacha, that after you make havdalah and you extinguish the candle in the wine or grape juice, whatever you can handle, so people, the machaber brings down, others not here, but just to give you an idea, machaber brings down, you're supposed to wash your eyes with the grape juice or they use wine, right, that you made havdalah, that you spilled off, and you extinguish it. That's brought down halacha. But I'm willing to bet if you ask my kids, they'll tell you, yeah, daddy does that. And so people put it on their eyes and also in their pockets. So I remember years ago, I think the Rashi was at my house for Shabbos, if you remember years ago. So we made Havdalah. And or it could have been one of the nice things that I had is I had a job. It wasn't a job. But in yeshivas, usually there's a rotation. The fourth week is an out Shabbos. That means you can go away. You don't have to be in yeshiva. So I was the type of person, I didn't like going away. I like sleeping in my bed. don't like tooling around. You know, New York was bad enough. It's gonna be on the internet. And so I usually stayed in. So I, as some of you know, I lived in the Reshiva's house. So I made Havdalah for the Reshiva. In her Havdalah for the Reshiva and the Rebbetzin. So it could have been there. But the Reshiva used to do that and then put it in his pockets and you say, I need money. Reshiva needs money. I need money. So I don't know how, but I pick that up and I do that. And I tell this, I need money. The shul needs money. So now my kids, you see my kids doing that. We need money. We need money. So like, that's not even a minhag. I don't know what you call it. But, you know, like you could see, the kids enjoy it. Yeah, it means something. You know, it's something. If you're missing those little things, you're missing a lot.
If you refresh it, you said that was a halacha then?
There is such a, well, yeah, it's a, but, yeah, I see, it's very good you made me clarify this. Now, if you didn't do that, you definitely did the Havdalah, right? But the Mechaber brings down that it's such custom. So that's what I'm saying before. Yeah. Torah, Derabbanan, custom.
Right. Now, I've heard the phrase halachic minhag.
Right.
Or something like that we've talked about right. before. And I'm also wondering, is this, do you have a chiyuv if you've done something three times?
Okay, that's a very good
like
question.
If you learn three times,
it'll we'll probably, yeah, I don't see it. But there, a lot of people don't know this. There's two ways that if you do something, you're locked into it. It becomes like a neder. Because a minug, the reason why you got to keep a minug is because it's a neder, meaning it's a vow. You know, you always hear people saying, bli neder. It's not just from shtick, and I come down hard on from shtick. Everybody knows that. It's not from shtick. The Ramah brings it down. Whenever you do something, you should try to do a bli neder. The reason why is because there's one of two ways, and people don't know this, the Chofetz Chaim says, that you could be locked into a minhag. One is if you do something three times consecutively. Oh, this is the example I used to give in Beis Yaakov. A girl decides, well, I say Tillim. I'm going to say one kapitel Tillim every night. So let's say she doesn't have anything. One way is if she says, I'm going to do it every night, she says it once and she has in mind that first night, let's say tonight, from now on, I'm going to say a kapitel Tillim every night. So doing it once with that positive intent makes it a neder.
She's made a neder.
Even though you haven't said it. But that was the intent.
Oh, just with the intent.
That was the intent. Let's say you didn't have intent. You do like I say, automatic pilot.
Or you just felt inspired.
Right. So three nights in a row, you said a kapitel tillim. Boom. You're in.
That becomes now for
that's
you.
Right.
That becomes,
that's where the three comes in. Because right. that's a pattern.
Now, what three I also understood was that when you say bli neder, it doesn't apply to something that you have a chiyuv on. It only applies
that's right.
to one before.
That's right. You can't say, bli neder, I'm going to put on tefillin every
right,
day.
Exactly. Right, exactly. You know, I'll put on tefillin tomorrow.
You know, like, right. I'll do it twice in one day. And that, well, that's a different issue.
So
but right.
only
something
so
that's
that
right.
doesn't obligate you to that.
Right. So you have to get into those things like washing your eyes or gebrochs on Pesach, not eating gebrochs, eating gebrochs, standing or sitting, Kiddush, Havdalah. I don't know. But I always tell people, whenever you do anything you're not sure about, always have in mind bli neder. Bli neder. I'm doing bli neder. No matter what. Whatever it is.
So I could say, bli neder, I'm going to come to the class next
that's
week.
Right. Right.
But if I come to the class three times in a row, then
I don't know if that's a neder. See, I'm trying to stick within the realm of halacha. So in other words, let's say you stood three times in a row, three Shabbosim in a row for Kiddush. That's it. Let's, grappling for some other minhagim. I'm trying to think of some minhagim. We'll get to one. We'll get to one, believe it or not. How you wash negelvas in the morning. We'll get to that. There's two different ways. Mm-hmm. We'll hopefully get to that.
If you're not paying attention and then you start, you do three in a row.
Three times in a row with blank intention, that's it.
But then you're not paying attention for a couple weeks after that and you end up sitting three times in a row. Now have you obligated yourself the other way? To do this,
well, see, that's a problem. In other words, because you broke your minhag illegally, that's
right.
a whole problem about which one takes effect.
Right.
But it's really a double whammy because you shouldn't have done. The person shouldn't have. I shouldn't say you. The
person.
The person shouldn't have done that. having a whole issue with somebody who became a Baal Tshuva through a certain organization. They have certain customs. And now he dives into a shul, this one, which doesn't go that way. So he wants to change his minhagim. It's not so simple. When my wife and I first came to the shul, so very few people know this unless you look very closely. There's certain customs here in the shul which are Hasidish. It's not exactly a Hasidish shul. But the answer is, for example, I'll give you an example. We say on Shabbos the Shir Shal Yom after Shachus. So, you know, Ashkenazi shuls, they do it at the end. Stand for Lech HaDodi. What's some of the others? A few others. I'm skipping. I'm blanking right now. A few others. So the answer is that when my father Al-Sham started the shul, there were some people who helped him start the shul. Were like Chassid Shabent. Well, they wanted to do these things. So that became the shul's custom. So tonight we said Sfira. That's right. So a real Ashkenaz shul. They say the bracha, they say the sfira, and the harachmon afterwards. We say the sihiratzon before, we say the kapitel tam and the on the bechok and the sfira and the other, right? That's all chasid shemenug. I mean, it's printed all, it's nice. But, you know, that's what it came from. So when my wife and I came, so there was a whole discussion we had with Rudolf Feinstein, which things we should change, which things we keep, what should we do, which are the, right? Because it's really not good people, and I was touching on that really this week at Kiddush in a way, in a veiled way, that people, again, even not Bali Chua, their customs are hodgepodged. Yeah. Now, this really comes from, I really don't want to get into a discussion about Minhag, but the ones got me on roll. See, people don't realize that this is a recent phenomenon that people don't have or have a very shallow grasp on custom. Most of it is because of what we talked about before. A lot of people, their parents or their grandparents or their great-grandparents were not from. But there's another reason. The other reason is people don't realize that throughout history, if you lived in Germany, let's give an example, you were a Yekke. So for example, you daven Ashkenaz. You, like the Aruch HaShulchan brings down that he had a Mesor in his family. We have that Mesor also in our family. That originally we were from Spain. So he says that originally his family was from Spain. Aruch HaShulchan, the Rav and the Vardik, you know, he wasn't exactly a Svardi. Right? So he says that his family, after the expulsion or at some point, left Spain, and they ended up in Germany. Their name was Epstein. They were in a city, and there's a city, I think, even now in Germany called Epstein. And so that became Epstein. So what happened? So what people don't realize is predominantly in halacha, there's such a thing as custom of father, minogavos, there's such a thing, altitosh tosimecha. But really what there was throughout time immemorial is minogamakam, the minog of the place. And even if in a city you had four or five shuls, they all did the same thing. Because that was the custom of the place. So let's say somebody moved from Morocco, from Fez, and they moved to Germany. Became a Yekke. You couldn't dance anymore. You couldn't eat kidneys. You couldn't. You had to come on time, right? You had all these type of things. Conversely, if you were an Ashkenazi from Germany and you moved to Morocco, forget it. You change your minhag. And you ate kidneys and all this type of stuff, right? So what happened is about 100 years ago, or a little more than that, when the Jews left Europe, and the Jews also were thrown out of the Arabic countries. So all of a sudden, what do you got? You got Jews from all over coming to New York, right? Chicago, L.A., whatever. And what minhag of a place? What minhag of a place? So this shul is Ashkenazim, and this is Sfardim, and these are Hasidim, and these are different Hasidim, and these are different Sfardim, these are different Ashkenazim, and these are different, they all have different menhagim, right? Even you go to yeshivas, pretty much they're all the same, a little different nuances, different little different customs, right? For example, like it tells in Chicago, or it tells all on they have Yom Kippur Katan before Rosh Chodesh, so they put on tefillin and mincha and they say Yom Kippur Katan. Other yeshivas don't do that, you know. So it's not uniform. There's different customs. So what happened is we had this urbanization of Klal Yisrael. So all of a sudden, like I tell you, you see it in this shul. In this shul, you know, this shul itself. So you got some Hasidim, and you got some Svardim, and you got some, you know, so mostly Ashkenazim, but not exclusively. Right? So it came up the Shabbos, right? Came up the Shabbos with my little announcer there. So, you know, before Kiddush, so Rebbe on the other side, Chaim, right? A bunch of, some of the Svardim in the crowd started doing that. So a few people called me last week and complained, Svardish Minog. I said, so it had to be some of the people called. I said, well, yeah, I see, hear the point, and it's true. But I said to them, you're an Ashkenazi, right? Yeah. Well, your kids have payas. They don't svard. So I said, like, what's the phrase in English? Look at the, who's calling the kettle black or whatever, however that phrase goes. So the answer is, so yeah, they said, but I became from through, you know, through the, I don't want to say who. And I thought, okay, but you don't in an Ashkenaz shul now, you know, like, you know, like. So, so it's a very difficult issue, but. That's what we got far up a field of that, but that's one of the things that Zev and I were discussing is minhagim. Minhagim are very important. Now, obviously, I'll be saying like some of the ideas about my minhagim, but obviously there's very a lot of different minhagim, and I think it's very important not only for the kids but for yourself. For yourself, because I know when certain things that I do personally mean a lot to me. It's like yours. You know, it's like yours. And I think the kids see that also. You know, this daddy did this. You know, it's really cool. You know, there's a Rav, Rabbi Gruskin, who was in Detroit. He spoke here a couple. So when he passed away, the kids put out, his children are big Talmid Chacham, put out a little pamphlet of all of his customs. They sent it to me. Really interesting to read. I told Rashiva Zagabai, Shimon Ishal, who's an L.A. boy. I told him, you know, Shimon, you should write down all of Rashiva's customs, like what he used to do. People would be interested. I mean, you have to do it. It's customs. Some things are cool. Things are cool. Okay, so how are we going to do this? I'd prefer somebody else read. Or are we going to read, or should I summarize, or how should we do this? We want to cover ground. That's the main thing, right? We want to cover ground. That's
if a person says the Zvart Hashem instead of Blue Netter,
Bezra Hashem is different.
Do they have a problem?
Bezra Hashem is a little different. That's the Shlo brings down that you always Al Pi Hashem Yisuv, Al Pi Hashem Yachlum. Base Pi Hashem you go, and base Pi Hashem you camp. So he said, that's where the custom says you say Bezras Hashem, with Hashem's help. So that could be construed as, I'm not really doing it. You know, I help to do it. That's the main thing. And in other words, like, you know, like, again, that's a different type of neder. Another type of neder is if I tell Ruvain, okay, I'll meet you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So that's like a neder. So you say, bli neder. So, okay, so how should we do this? Somebody want to read first till 1 and 2? You want to start with the mitzvah?
Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, opens a section of Orach Chaim with the words, one should be strong like a lion to rise in the morning to serve his creator.
Maybe you should stop there. Okay. I was going to stop you after Rabbi Yosef Karo. The author of Shulchan Aruch. Everybody knows the history, right?
No.
Everybody knows that it's fascinating history. In Beis Yaakov, I used to, now this is 11th grade halacha, these are some, you know, very wonderful family, girls from very wonderful families. I did a shul a few years ago. Every year I used to give an introduction to halacha. It used to take me like 2-3 weeks. Because the question is, like, where does halacha come from? it comes from Sinai, obviously, right? We all believe that a kid called me, somebody's nephew or somebody, not from kids, has to do a paper for school. So I sent an interview with an Orthodox rabbi. So we all know that the core of everything that we believe is Mamad Har Sinai, that everything we have came from Hashem. So Hashem told us how to run our lives. If you have rules for every game that you have, so obviously you have to have some rules in life. You can't just to whatever you want. It doesn't make sense. You have the rules for monopoly, so you don't have rules for life. So Hashem told us, and we know the difference between us and other religions is Hashem actually spoke to us, right? All you're familiar with that, which makes our religion unique. We actually spoke to Hashem. So, and everything's complete. Everything's complete. Now, the way Hashem made it was really ingenious. Not that Hashem needs my haskama. That Hashem gave us the Torah, 5 books of Moses. But as everyone knows, if you read a pasuk in Torah, I used to do this to the girls in Beis Hakel. You open up a chumash randomly. Say, okay, read the pasuk. Girl picks a pasuk, and you read it. And we don't sometimes appreciate this. If you take a pasuk in the Torah and read it, just read it literally. It's inexplicable. It doesn't make any sense. The examples I used to give. One time a girl opened up, talked about bringing up the chaylev to the mizbeach. Chaylev is fat. So I looked at her and said, yeah, that's what it means? You know, in the Torah, there's no dots. So chaylev is fat, it's spelled cheslam beis. But cheslam beis could also be chalav, could mean the milk. So how do you know what to bring up to the mizbeach? The Torah doesn't say. Answer is, Hashem had an ingenious system, that there's a mesorah, right? There's a Torah Shabbat path. That's obvious. Nobody would write a book like that. Like, I always say, tefillin. Bind them on your arm. What? I'm saying. So anyway, so Hashem put at the same time a Torah Shabbat path. It has to be. So Hashem said, here are the notes, Rav Hirsch says. Here's the notes. Bind it on your arm and wear it between your eyes. But this is what I mean. And he told Moshe that. Moshe explained to Klai, so you had to remember all that. What's amazing is everybody did remember that for about 1,000 years. The Gemara and Chagiga said there was no machlokas, right? Everything, you call a rabbi today and they say, what's the halacha? And he'll tell you, like, I don't know, quite often, it's a machlokas, right? You have to realize for 1,000 years after Maamon Har Sinai, there was no machlokas. Now, this really ties into what we said before. That does not mean that everybody did the same thing, believe it or not. Basically, everybody did the same thing. But I believe very strongly that there were, for each Shevet, there was different customs. And I have a proof for this, because the Mishnah Berurah says that there are 12 gates in heaven, for each Shevet. Each Shevet had its own gate in Shemayim, and each Shevet had a different gate where their tefillahs would go up through. Right? So everybody says, yeah, everybody daven's different, right? So I'm gonna, right? Answer is, first of all, it's wrong. If you look at Shemoneh Esrei, everybody's brachas are the same. I don't care, Ashkenaz, Svar, Teiman, Chassidish, it doesn't make a difference. Everybody says, Brachat Hashem, Shomei Tefillah. The brachas are the same. All 19 brachas are the same. My question is the lead up. A little different twang here and there. The answer is, it's a beautiful idea. Each Shevet had its own nusach. The brachas were whatever. Everything basically was the same. But there was a little different knach. That's really nice. Right? We're not mass-producing Jews here. Right? You know, it's not like everybody coming out of the factories, right? You know, every shaver was a little different. You know, every shaver was a little different. I believe the same thing with Kohanim. There were 24 families of Kohanim. I don't know, maybe they had a little different sashes. They did a little, you know, I don't know what it was. You know, everybody's unique. Right? Kriyas Yamsuf. It wasn't like Universal Studios. Right? It was 12 compartments, right? If you were in Yehuda and you wanted to go through Don's thing, they kicked you out. You said, no, go over there. I heard a very nice word from Rabbi Fassman's father, Al-Bashan. Davin in a shul in Chicago, my father was there. He said, everybody had their own compartment, but everybody was going the same direction. And the walls were transparent, so everybody's looking out for each other. It was a very nice idea. So every Sheva had different customs, and that's where all this stuff came from originally. Well, different customs, so fine. Nothing wrong with that. So everybody had different customs, but basically the halacha was all the same for 1,000 years. Then the Gemara in Chagiga says there was a question that if you brought a korban on Yontif, so one of the things, if you brought your own korban on Yontif, you had to put your hands on it and push your hands on it and put pressure on the animal, called smicha. You had to do that. So the question is, you're allowed to bring certain private korbanos on Yontif. Question is, could you push on the animal? It was a machlokis. So Tosus there in Chagiga says, That was the first machlokas in history. So to realize how huge this is. 1,000 years from Maamar Har Sinai, there wasn't one machlokas. All of a sudden, 1,000 years. Can you think? We can't even think 1,000 years. 1,000 years. 200 years, long time ago. George Washington, a long time ago. 1,000 years, no machlokas. Again, that doesn't mean there isn't different minhagim. So what happened? It was machlokas. That cracked it open. Now, why was there machlokas? Two reasons. This is very important to remember. One is we're going further and further away from Maamar Har Sinai. Maamar Har Sinai is perfect, right? We're the opposite of Darwinism, right? Mm-hmm. Darwin, you got a monkey and just get a better monkey, right? We believe Maamar Har Sinai is perfection, and we're going further and further away from that. Discuss this with the Rishiva many times. But you're going further and further away. Further and further away. So then you got Machlokas. So then what happened? Give a few more generations. So now we have to write down the Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral law. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did that. That's what we call Mishnah. I'm trying to concise, make this really compact. Then you had another about 300, 400 years, and the discussion exactly what the Mishnah meant, because Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi made the Mishnah in a way that'd be cryptic, so you also have to have a teacher. He didn't make it an open book. And then what happens? They had to write down the Gemara, which discussed the Mishnah. But as you all know, if you ever learn Gemara, try to figure out a Gemara, right? So that was hard. So then what happens? Then you go a little further, and you have Rishonim. Well, you have the Gaonim. And then you have Rishonim, like Rashi and Tosas, and they discuss, they argue about what the Gemara means, right? Then you get to the end of that, and now the question is, people don't realize, not long ago, when you asked the Rav Shaila, he passed it straight from the Gemara. People couldn't do that anymore.
Who was this?
Any Rav.
Oh,
any Rav. This? But this is before the 1600s, before the 1600s. But then, once you get around to that time, it's a whole interesting story that somebody wanted to reconstitute the Sanhedrin. So there's one place after the expulsion of Spain. So what happened then is Rabbi Yosef Karo, who's beyond our comprehension, took the opinions of the Rush, the Riff, and the Rambam, took those three opinions, brought them together, and wrote what we call the Shulchan Aruch. Went through all halacha that's pertinent to us, and took those three opinions, the Rush, the Riff, and the Rambam, and whoever the majority opinion is, usually, and he wrote that down.
How did that relate to the trying to reconstitute the Sanhedrin?
Because that didn't work. See, again, it's a whole long discussion. But see, the Romans were diabolical people. They realized that they wanted to destroy this. So in order to have a Sanhedrin, you need great people, and also they have to have smicha. Not like the animal smicha, but you know, Moshe put his hands on Yeshua and to 70 Zakenim. Any person who received that from Moshe could in turn put their hands on their student, and if person had that unbroken chain of laying of the hands, they were eligible to sit on a Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin could kill people, Sanhedrin could mete out justice, Sanhedrin could set the calendar, which is huge. So the Romans were out to destroy that. They made a law that anybody who gave smicha, or anybody who received smicha, or anybody who lived in the city where a smicha would be given, would be killed. So to make a long story short, they broke that chain. Well, the problem is you can't have a Sanhedrin. So Torah survived without that. Now you have to realize this is what's important about the idea of Eliyahu HaNavi, right? Eliyahu HaNavi is still alive. We don't see him, but that's very important. Because when Mashiach comes, we have to have a Sanhedrin. How are you going to have a Sanhedrin? How are you going to restart something that was broken? Answer is, Eliyahu will come. He has smicha, so he'll do it, Eliyashiv, and then we can have a Sanhedrin again. Also, Eliyahu is a Kohen. He's Torah, so he could do the Paraduma. He could shock the Paraduma and do the Paraduma and then sprinkle all of us, and then we all become Torah. So that's why it's Eliyahu Novi's a central character here in our Geula.
So why was Rabbi Karo's...
So his Rebbe tried to restart smicha. It failed. It was shot down. So Rav Yosef Karo said, yeah, but we still have a problem. There has to be a central address for all halacha. Right, or else this person will go here, this person. So he wrote a book they felt would unite all Klal Yisrael. Now you have to, again, I don't want to get into Rav Yosef Karo as beyond our comprehension. So it was a bestseller, to use a, it was just one problem. You have to realize, I don't want to get into this that much, but there was already a split between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. When Babylonia started going downhill, this is at the end of the era of the Gaonim, Babylonia started going downhill, so Jews went to two places. They either went to Northern Africa, or went to Germany. That's where Ashkenazim and Sephardim come from. And the yeshivas split up. The great yeshivas in Bavel split up. And therefore, that's where we get Ashkenazim and Sephardim. So Rav Yosef Karo was a Sephardi. Not bad. But the problem was the great yeshivas that were in Ashkenazi land, which at this time were in Poland already, right? Originally, the Jews who were in Ashkenaz were German, right? That's what we call Ashkenazim, and France, right? Rashi and Tosis, right? But at this time already, they were moving east, right? Jews never sit still, so sometimes out of force. So they were in Poland already. The great yeshivas were in Poland, really great yeshivas. So the Jews in Poland and the surrounding areas got the Shulchan Aruch and loved it, but they said, not fair. Because two out of your three of your basin were Sephardim. You rejected the opinions of Tosis. Now what people don't appreciate is when we learn Gemara and we learn Tosis we look as a commentary, right, on the Gemara, which is true. And Tosis argues Rashi and that, right? But what very few people realize is Tosis paskins. If you take any Gemara, you want to pass me a Gemara, anyone, it doesn't make a difference. Pick anyone. Anyone. Fatter the better, usually. Now, if you look in the back of any Gemara, you'll find at the end of a Masechta, very few people know this, is, here it is, Piskei Tosis. It's the cliff notes. They tell you, how does Tosis paskin? Now, Tosis paskining, you have to realize, means the Rashi Tosis line, which means the line of the Ashkenazim in their Masorah from Torah. So the Polish Jew said, not fair? What are you doing? The Rosh, the Rif, the Rambam, you left out Tosis. Not fair. So the Ramah was the Rav of Krakow, who we don't want to get into right now, who died in his early 40s, which is scary. Lag BaOmer, right? Until recently, and so I think they still do it now. People in Krakow would make bonfires. Mm-hmm. It would be sort of like the same thing as they do with Rosh Hashanah Yochai. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big deal. So the Ramah, who was the Rav of Krakow, wrote notes on whatever. You see, today I would write my own book, right? The genius of the Ramah is even though he's hundreds of miles apart, he saw the problem, so he added his notes on the Shulchan Aruch, and now it is a central book. Whether you're Ashkenaz, Sephard, Rabbi First in Chicago told me once, if you don't follow the Shulchan Aruch, you're out of halacha. You could be whatever you are, but you have to be somewhere in Shulchan Aruch. Now you can't all of a sudden, I don't go that way. You can't do that. So that was the Shulchan Aruch. That's who the Shulchan Aruch was and is. So we follow the Shulchan Aruch. So you have to realize it was a groundbreaking idea because, like I said before, originally for a time immemorial, if you went to a Rav, he knew the Gemaras. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden you have a short form, and that's why the Shulchan Aruch was controversial. People were scared, you wouldn't have to know the Gemaras. So what people don't realize is, you ask anybody who paskins a shayla, they tell you the only way to learn halacha is really to go through, start with the Pesukim, but go through the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Rashi and the Tosis, Rishonim and Achronim and everything, and end up with the Shulchan Aruch or people later, right? That's the only real way. The Mishnah Berurah says that, believe it or not. But people can't handle it. So today, we have a bigger problem. People can't even learn Mishnah Berurah as easy as Chofetz Chaim made it, right? That guy knows Mishnah Berurah. Wow, you know? So anyways, that's where we also Karo. We got way up a field on that, right? So he says at the beginning, one should wake up like a lion to rise in the morning to serve his creator. This is a beautiful idea. I won't get into Hashkava that much. But my Rashi was, said, that's the opening words of Shulchan Aruch. You have to wake up like a lion. Right? So what does that tell you? It tells you a beautiful idea. Scott, you've heard this from me before. It's a beautiful idea of the Rashi. Who's the Shulchan Aruch talking to? You think the Shulchan Aruch is just talking to me, that I have trouble waking up in the morning? Shulchan Aruch is talking to everybody. Everybody in Klal Yisrael. So you know who the Shulchan Aruch is talking to? The Vilna Gaon, Baal Shem Tov. So the in other words, the Shulchan Aruch is saying to these great people, you have to wake up like a lion. They need to be told to wake up like a lion. I'm sure they woke up like lions. Answer is, everybody needs chizuk in the morning. You have to realize, it's not just rough on you to wake up in the morning, or rough on me. It's rough for everybody to wake up in the morning. It's very hard. And that's why in our universal book of halacha, it says, you know what? You're just like Rav Moshe Feinstein. Everybody has a problem. Huh?
You don't wake up. You're yawning and stretch.
Right. So believe it or not, one of the commentaries says, somebody told me this recently, that lions sleep 20 hours a day.
Most of them.
But those 4 hours, watch it.
So if you're a deer.
Or a zebra.
Yeah.
Or a gazelle. Right? So that's the idea. We have to realize that we have to be like lions, because we have very short time to pack in a lot of stuff we got to do. Especially as Jews, right? Got a lot of mitzvahs. You know, so you waste an hour, you waste 5 minutes, it's gone. Right? This morning I woke up, and I had about 10, maybe 5 minutes before I had to go to shul. So, you know, I could slump on the couch, but that's dangerous. So this week's parsha is very short. So you're supposed to go through the parsha every day, every week. Supposed to go over the parsha twice and do the onklos or Rashi. Short parsha. I looked up. Short Aliyah I was up to. Boom. Hey, you can do a lot in 5 minutes. Okay. Okay, so from the moment we arise in the morning, a Jew is at his Creator's service. That's an incredible idea, right? Ready to faithfully observe all of his mitzvahs. Right? We have instant access. I always tell people, the most powerful people are the people who have access. There it is. You have access to Hashem 24/7. You appreciate this? A non-Jew doesn't have that access to Hashem. They have 7 mitzvahs, and whenever one of those 7 mitzvahs come up, which is not too often, then they have access to Hashem. You have instant access constantly to Hashem. You know what that is? It's amazing. Okay? Mitzvahs impose a divine order upon our lives, lifting us above materialism of the day, day-to-day life, to a level of spiritual content and meaning. Somebody in the shuls of Baal Tshuva told me a beautiful idea. Maybe a lot of you relate to this. When you weren't from, how often do you think about holiness in the course of your day? Holiness? Unless you're talking about Swiss cheese or a bagel. But he said it always hits him very hard. How many times a day do you do a mitzvah? So every mitzvah you do, you make a bracha. And every bracha you make on a mitzvah has the same word. Asher kiddushan of the mitzvah. Sometimes you make me holy by this. Amazing concept. That's what the guy told me. Amazing thing. Holiness. Right? It's an amazing thing. And it does pull you above this garbage that we live in. The day-to-day garbage. Okay? Want to go further? Second paragraph? To observing mitzvahs?
Through observing mitzvahs upon arising in the morning, man announces his entry into God's world, Hashem's service for that day. He washes his hands just as a Kohen would do before serving in the Beis HaMikdash. He dresses modestly because he knows Hashem's glory fills the entire world, and he covers his head out of reverence for the Shekhinah.
I don't want to spend too much time. We'll get to that in the next page, so let's go a little further. We'll talk a little more about being a Kohen a little later. Okay?
One should make every effort to rise early enough to recite Shacharis with a congregation in the shul.
Right, this is very important. People don't realize, all of us struggle, and the Gemara says this is natural, all of us struggle with davening. Right? I'm going to really concentrate on davening. And that gets as far as 3 words into davening, right? And then we float off. So we have to keep on plugging away. But another idea is, you know, if you daven with a minion, so your tefillahs go through. Amazing concept. So imagine, if I would ask you, we got Rav Liashev davening here, and we got 10, 13-year-olds davening here. Right. Which tefillah, for sure, went through Tisha B'Av? Well, I'd be pretty sure Rav Liashev's did too. But which, yeah, probably. But for sure the kids, for sure the 10 teenagers. So it's an amazing concept about how much Hashem loves us, that if you daven with a minyan, even though, no, we're not advocating floating off during davening. But if you did, it's filled out through anyway. I mean, if you concentrate, it'd be even higher, right? So don't, right?
It goes through the diplomatic pouch. It doesn't get inspected like
that's individual letters. It's a powerful thing. That's why we see, you know, like we're not like other religions that, you know, wherever you are, put down your prayer mat, you know? Right. I mean, you have to daven even. But we all try to get to minyan.
So, just a question on his language here, where it says one should make every
right.
effort. Does that mean it's a halacha?
Yeah.
Derabanan or deraisa?
I don't know if it's the deraisa. Well, they derive it from a deraisa. In other words,
what's
they learn
the
it. Well, it's a whole disc. Elokim nitzav ba'adas kel. Hashem lives in the adas of Hashem, and it also says it's very interesting. See, that's why Hashem made it this way. The word adas is an unusual word. The word adas, what's an adas? I don't know what the definition of adas is. So the answer is by the miraglim, by the spies, Hashem says, how much longer do I have to put up with this wicked adas? Ah! So over there, what was it? And people say, why don't women count for a minyan? I don't know, but all I know is it's a definition. In other words, we know that Hashem dwells amongst an adas. What's an adas? The only way you see only place you see adas is by the miraglim. And the only thing I know about the miraglim is there were 10 wicked ones, and they were all men above 13. That's why I know. So now that becomes the definition for an adas. So now let's plug it into the words. Hashem dwells amongst an adas. So you gotta have 13-year-olds or above.
They don't have to be wicked men, though.
No, they don't have to be wicked.
They don't have to be
righteous.
They don't have to be righteous.
So, but I always thought that we got the 10 for the minyan from Avraham and
no.
Sodom and Gomorrah.
No, the halakha says no. It's from there.
Uh-huh.
That's where we get it from.
So, in other words, davening with the minyan is deraisa based on that?
It's I think it's a deraisa. Well, see, again, see, the reason why he says should is because he has to be careful about his language, because then you'd say, okay, I'm in Fontana. There ain't no minyan, so I'm not going to daven.
You know, my
so you daven anyways, right? It's
yeah,
just you're not davening with a minyan.
My rabbi said that if he said that, Rabbi Feinstein said, Moshe Feinstein said, that if you're within 18 minutes of getting
right.
to a shul, you're
right.
obligated to daven.
Right, but you have to use your seichel sometimes. Like, see... Like, for example, your wife needs you, right? And, you know, everybody has ups and downs. So here, you know, you're within, so you have to, it's a valuable commodity, say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes you got to...
If we forget those, but I'm just talking about the times when you don't have enough energy.
Right.
But I mean, still...
Yeah, so you got to push yourself, but you also, you know, it's a tough thing. One time, believe it or not, we asked the Rishi, I think my wife asked the Rishi, like, we have to push ourselves. So you can push yourself too much. You know, everybody needs a vacation. Sometimes you overpush yourself. So how do you know? Is there no way to answer it? You have to daven for Siyata Dishmai. It's a very difficult question. So he said, but the answer is, you have to daven to Hashem that, because people flip out, or people become abnormal. Right? You could be sure if somebody's doing something weird, it's wrong. I saw a story recently that Roshom Shvadron saw somebody who was davening like really weird. I went to it, they put, you know, like gesticulating in the middle of Shemon Esrei. So the story that they bring is that Roshom went up to him and said, normal, right? Maybe there's something weird. It's probably not, it's not based upon anything. It could also be gaiva. I don't want to get too far into that. You know, like the famous story that there was a famous humble person at the time of the Vilna Gaon. Sat on a rock by the main shul, by the door of the main shul, sat on a rock. Everybody was saying what a big tzaddik he is. He just sits on a rock and says till him all day, or whatever he did. So I don't know what happened, but evidently the city condemned his rock, and the city, they made him get his rock out of there. It was a public nuisance, so he had to move his rock to his house. So evidently the story goes that he died a short time later. So the Vilna Gaon said he died for lack of honor. Mm-hmm. When everybody saw him, so you know, like, you know, like I'm the city's honor, you know. So, but anyways. Yeah, so anyway, so we should appreciate what it means to daven with a minyan. And women are not obligated in this. But men have to make it to minyan, if at all possible. Okay, when we sleep, I'll go a few more minutes.
When we sleep, we entrust Hashem with our neshama. Hashem, in His kindness, restores our neshama to us in the morning, leaving us feeling rested and refreshed. Therefore, when a Jew wakes up, he thanks his Creator by reciting Modeni. I thank you, living and eternal King, that you have returned my soul to me with compassion. Your trustworthiness is great. One should pause slightly between saying the words Bechamla and Rabbah.
Right, a lot of people mess this up, right? We say Moda ani lefanecha melech chai v'kayam. Right, you say this even before you wash your hands. Right, as soon as you open your eyes, that's in big letters here. Okay? This is like one of the first things kids learn. Moda ani lefanecha melech chai v'kayam. Shachasar tabin minshnasi lechem lasi. Rabbi Arsbo obviously has it right, which I think you could assume. Bechamla, they have a dash. Rabba Musacha, a lot of times when they teach kids, Bechamla Rabba, Hashem, you have returned my soul to me with great compassion. But it's based upon the Pasuk, so it goes Rabba Musacha. So we have to be careful about that. Now, again, this is a really important thing. We're going to get into this more when we talk about morning brachas. But when you wake up in the morning, we have to thank Hashem, because who says you have to wake up in the morning? People don't, unfortunately. And we're going to get into that when we talk about later. We're not going to talk about today, but when we talk about morning brachas, exactly what morning brachas do. It should energize your day, the morning brachas. How much more time do I have? Okay, let's go till like an hour until 9:15. So let's try to do this little section very quickly. Okay.
Nitilas yadayim, washing hands with grace. We wash our hands with water as soon as possible after awakening. Children should also observe nitilas yadayim upon rising. Therefore, one should try to arrange having the water close to where he sleeps, so that he will not have to walk more than 4 amos before being able to wash his hands.
Okay, so a lot of people do this. They have negelbasser, as we call it, by their bed. Some people are lenient on this. Some people hold, there's some opinions say this whole house is considered dalal amos. Mr. Burr says you shouldn't really rely upon that, but still some people, you know, make a quick run and wash their hands. Some places do that. No matter what, like the Mishnah Berurah says, some people used to walk 4 amos and stop, 4 amos and stop. So he says you shouldn't do that. The whole idea is, we'll see later, maybe we can run through that also, the reasons why we wash. So you want to wash as quickly as possible. So no matter what you do, we should try to wash as quickly as possible. Okay, once you...
And with children, what age?
Well, obviously not infants, but, you know, again, you have to use a seichel. But usually we try to get kids, you know, 3-4 years old. We'll see why. Because, let's do this. One should not touch.
Yeah. One should not touch bodily orifices such as mouth, eyes, nose, ears before performing nitilas yadayim. Similarly, one should not touch any food before performing nitilas yadayim.
Right. Now, again, we'll explain why in the next section. Maybe we'll run through 6 very quickly. The reasons why. If you touch food that's in a utensil or in a container, so then it's no problem. Let's say somebody wakes up real, it's better to wash right away. Let's say for whatever reason somebody is just absolutely dying of thirst. I mean, not dying, it would be different. So a lot of people are lenient that you could drink water out of a water bottle, because you're not really touching the food itself. Again, there's some lenient opinions about that. But again, usually we say you should wash right away. Okay, let's see why. Maybe we should run through these really quickly. And then we'll spend a little more time about them next week.
Several reasons for this netilat yadayim are recited in the halach literature.
Okay, there's 3. Okay, there's 3 here.
In the base of English, the Kohanim would sanctify their hands by washing them before beginning the sacrificial service. When we rise in the morning, it is as if we were created anew, and we are about to begin serving our Creator. Therefore, we wash our hands and recite the blessing, al netilat yadayim, at the start of the day before we begin performing mitzvahs.
Isn't that an incredible idea? Imagine being a Kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what you are every morning. That we pass on halacha like this. They wash their hands. You wash your hands. We'll get to it a little later. That there are some opinions that you should wash your feet. We don't do it anymore, because that's what the Kohanim do. We'll get to it later. Washing our face and stuff like that. Okay, well, hold on. Well, you're jumping ahead of us. Okay, so one reason is, think about this, or the close one. You're a Kohen serving in the base of Mikdash. Your world is your base of Mikdash. Amazing idea. Okay, number two.
Another reason for this Netzilat Yadayim is that while sleeping, one's hands most likely touch the parts of the body that are normally covered, rendering them unclean. Since in such a case one is required to wash his hands before praying, our sages ordain that we wash our hands upon rising. Because of these reasons, we recite a bracha on having washed our hands before reciting chakras.
Okay, so this is an important halakha altogether. If during the day you touched a part of your body which is normally covered, above your elbow, right, any part of your body that's normally covered, you have to wash. You have to wash your hands before you learn or before you daven, right? Or we'll see later, at least wipe your hands off or something. But you should really, people don't know this. If you we'll get to it later, scratch your scalp, not touch your hair. But scratch your scalp of your head, you have to wash. So again, during the night, we assume you did touch something like that. So therefore, before you make a bracha, before you do anything, you have to wash. But you have to be aware of this. This is during the day also.
I distinguish between washing for cleanliness and washing for.
Oh, we'll get to that. That's going to be next week.
No,
hold on.
Soap, okay.
Right. Hold off on that. We'll get a very good point.
What you're saying, discuss. The washing is like not that I don't have to wash.
It's a good question. It gets involved with it. We're going to have to do it next week. Next week, we're going to see there's various things we're going to wash for. It's going to be the next page, page 7. And he doesn't distinguish, but there's a difference between why you're washing. There's two predominant reasons why you would wash. Either cleanliness or because of Ruach Ra. That's the third one. Let's do three. This is the famous one.
Yeah, spiritual impurity rests on a person after he has slept. We remove it by pouring water 3 times on each hand.
Okay, so that's the famous one, the Ruach Ra. And that's why there's a Ruach Ra, which we don't know what that means, but it's something not good, that's on your fingertips. And therefore, if you touch a part of your body that's open, Ruach Ra could affect it, or food, or drink, it could affect it, another person, right? You try not to do that. That Ruach Ra affects, and so therefore you have to wash it off. Just before we break, you should realize there's an argument in Halacha. I don't know if he talks about this, or maybe I'll talk about it later. When does that Ruach Ra come? There's two opinions. One says what you would think. When you sleep, so during that time it gets on your fingers, and then when you wake up, the Ruach Ra is on your fingers. There's another opinion, where most people don't know. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. That is in the morning at sunrise. There's a very big difference in Halacha between those two opinions. The difference is, let's say somebody didn't sleep. Shavuos might come up soon. So according to the first opinion, you didn't sleep. No Ruach Ra. Second opinion says, so you don't have to wash. According to the second opinion, says it comes automatically on a person as soon as sun rises, so then you have to wash again.
But you wouldn't have to wash if you woke up before sunrise.
Oh, very good. That's the next thing I was going to say. Another nafkamina, the other difference would be, let's say I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, I washed my hands. Okay. So if you say it's because of sleep, I washed. If you say, no, it's the Ruach Ra comes onto your fingers at sunrise, you have to wash again. Mm. Now, believe it or not...
Well, whether you're sleeping or not at sunrise,
right,
it comes on your
hands. Exactly. That's why you see sometimes people at an early minyan, you see them go washing again. Because if they start davening before sunrise, for that reason. Now, what's interesting is that I have a sefer by Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he says that if you washed before sunrise, you do not have to be careful not to touch your eyes after that. Which he has a whole explanation why, but simply it would seem that would be a problem at sunrise. Like we should have some halacha, you shouldn't touch your eyes or your mouth until you wash after sunrise, according to that second opinion. But there's no such opinion, so you should just be aware of that.
So how do we hold it?
So we do that. Believe it or not, the Machaber brings down, a lot of people don't know this, that if you daven early, let's say like sometimes our 4 or 5, 5:45 minyan, so they wash before sunrise.
Right.
So you're right. You should wash again sunrise.
So us Ashkenaz should.
Or
wash,
even Svardim, yeah.
Should wash if we like I awakened before sunrise.
Sunrise. So after sunrise, sometime you should wash again. Again, you don't have to worry about touching your body or anything like that. You know, touching your eyes or anything like
that.
But before
I put on film, because you put on
that's
film.
That's right.
Okay.
But at some point you should wash again. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoyed it very much. Maybe what we should do is...